Hey there, Omaha. Welcome into another episode of Restaurant Hoppin'. I've got a fantastic guest for you today, but real quick, before we get to them, I have to tell you about Certified Piedmontese, because this is a brand I am so excited about. In fact, I will never forget the first time I had Certified Piedmontese. The crown jewel of my initial visit to Casa Bovina was a beautiful rib cap that was so lean and tender, it was almost silky in texture. The moment that beef hit my taste buds, I was hooked. These animals are raised all natural on a network of family ranches across the Midwest, so Certified Piedmontese is able to cut out the middleman and buy directly from the source. And while I highly encourage you to check out Casa Bovina, you can savor this beef at home, too. Whether you order off Piedmontese.com or by calling 1-800-414-3487, your purchase will be shipped directly to your front door. Plus, when you use my discount code HOPPEN, H-O-P-P-E-N, you get 25% off your order. How can you beat that? So what are you waiting for? Get some steaks, burgers, bacon, or other meats and experience the Certified Piedmontese difference for yourself today. And now to my guest. Hey there, Omaha. Welcome into another episode of Restaurant Hoppin'. I'm your host, Dan Hoppin', and look, you guys know me. I am all about any restaurant that serves great food, but when you combine excellent cooking with an absolutely awesome mission to help people, that's when you can find a truly special place. And that's why I'm so excited to introduce my guest from Udalali, which is the newest addition to the Dundee neighborhood today. We've got Executive Director Tim Steinbach and Head Chef Doug Case. Guys, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Okay, so because we've got multiple voices, both for viewers and for listeners today, I would love for each of you to just introduce yourselves real quickly and talk about how you got involved with Udalali. Let's start with you, Tim.
Okay, I'll go first. Tim Steinbach, I'm the executive director, and I got involved through actually Metropolitan Community College. I had been working with them in a previous role with their 180 reentry population, and I have a background in food. So when the opportunity came available, Diane Goodcollins from Metro 180 reached out and said, Tim, I think you might. This might be a fit for you, and I checked off a lot of the boxes of the things they were looking for in a director, so I got the job, fortunately enough, and I was very, very fortunate that this guy was already on board, or at least in mind to be on board, when I came along, and so he does all the heavy lifting, and he should get all the credit. I just make sure that, you know, the garbage gets picked up weekly. So
that's an important thing. We don't overlook leaving garbage around. So
now we have a very collaborative culture, I would say. You know, Tim's not afraid to jump in into any role, as are any of us, really. I mean, it's just there's such a synergy there and such a mutual collaborative approach. It's unlike anything I've ever been a part of. It's been fantastic.
I love that.
Yeah. So I guess I'm Doug Case, and I'm the executive chef, and wasn't my plan to ever work in a restaurant. I've had a 30-plus year career in the business, and was most recently executive chef at Children's Hospital, and it was a very comfortable job. You know, I had my covered parking spot, and 9 to 5 hours, you know, so I was kind of sailing off into the sunset with that job. A good friend in the business calls me up every once in a while to see if I know anyone for various positions, and in this instance, he had asked if he knew anyone that would be interested in a chef position with an educational piece, and I said, well, what about me? And the rest was history. I had a great interview with the board, and it just seemed like a perfect fit. You know, my past experiences and desire to help and mentor, and there's nothing more that I enjoy and get off on than somebody who comes in unsure, and a couple weeks later they work with confidence and pride, and you know, we're getting that in spades right now with our participants. So
fantastic.
Yeah, really, really happy to be a part of it.
We will definitely get more into that in a minute, but there are two things I want to just lay out for listeners right off the bat. First of all, Udalali is located in Dundee, just off 50th in California. So if you are familiar with the former Mark's Bistro, this is now occupying that space that closed in 2023. Second, this is something I didn't know. Oodalali is the rallying cry of Robin Hood and his merry men in the famous Disney movie. And it makes a lot of sense once you understand the mission of the restaurant. I include that because as someone who's not seen that movie, like when I first heard of Oodalali, like I was excited about it because there was a lot of buzz behind it. But I was like, man, what's up with this name? And my wife was like, you're joking, right? You know that's from Robin Hood. And so I think everyone else might know that, and I'm just living under a rock. But in case you're under the rock with me, now you know.
So, well, I think that movie came out in like 1970, which is the year before I was born. So you're not under a rock. It's been a while.
Well, thank you for affirming me, Tim. This is why I like having you guys on the show. I feel like less of an idiot already. Okay, so I typically start these episodes talking about food, and we're definitely going to talk about the food at Oodalali because it's awesome. But I want to start with the other side of the restaurant, because Oodalali is not the typical restaurant. In addition to serving great food, what are you guys hoping to accomplish with this concept?
Well, I alluded a little bit earlier to Metropolitan 180 and to Metropolitan Community College, their 180 Reentry Assistance Program that we've partnered with. And so there are participants coming out of incarceration, and we're providing them with employment and education and hopefully a jump start to get ahead in their life on the other side of the bars. So,
and what are the challenges for those individuals who are trying to find a way to re-enter society?
You're asking a deeper question than I think you know. There's an obvious level to it in that there's a stigma. You know, people coming out of incarceration, there's definitely a stigma there, and some people don't want to work with them. And we were actually a little afraid at first that we'd get a lot of NIMBYs, you know, from the neighborhood. But we've been pretty fortunate. I take that back. We've been very, very fortunate. Everybody's been super positive about what we're doing and encouraging us and happy about it. So Dundee's been awesome in that. But to get back to your question, that stigma and then some training. You know, a lot of times the folks that we're working with haven't grown up in the best situations, and they haven't had a lot of good positive role models around, and they've got stinking thinking. You know, they're not prepared for success. And so what we're hoping to do is bridge that gap, help them, give them another perspective on life, give them some fantastic training. And anybody that says they've worked with Chef Doug Case is, you know, and he puts his stamp of approval on them, they're going to be okay in the Omaha restaurant scene for sure. So we'd love to give them that leg up. And then the deeper part of the question is that stinking thinking that I mentioned a second ago. We've already, in this brief time, we've seen a couple people that we worked with coming out of incarceration that we just weren't successful with, sadly. It's they fall into their old ways of thinking, their old bad habits, and kind of self-sabotage. And it's sad to watch it happen. It truly hurts when it does. But the only thing we can do is kind of wipe away our tears and get up the next morning and try for the next guy, you know, or girl. So,
well, that was something that I wanted to talk about, because obviously you're teaching kitchen skills. You're teaching culinary. I'm assuming there's some front of house involved too. So you're teaching like tangible skills, but you're also helping these people like reestablish that they have value. Sure. I mean, I can only imagine, you know, I've never, you know, been incarcerated myself, but there's probably, you know, some questions that you have in your mind about self-worth or just where do I fit in, and just being able to help those people kind of mend that mindset, I'm sure, is a huge part of this as well, right?
Absolutely. You know, I really try to promote a culture of acceptance and mutual respect. There are a lot of kitchens and food service environments where that's not always present, and that can make a difficult situation even seem a little more arduous, you know. My goal is to make people feel comfortable, first off, to know it's a safe place, to know they're not being judged, that, you know, that we're building a team. And I've been blown away by the buy-in and just watching people's eyes light up once they realize, hey, I can do this. And, you know, I love to share, like, you wrote some very nice things about us, and we've had some other people in the community really give us some good feedback, and I love to share that with the team. That they have to know, it's like they're calling you guys one of the most talented kitchens in the city right now. You know, these are not long high-end culinary graduates, long-term lifer cooks. These are people that want to get better and have a lot of pride in what they're doing. And it's been awesome. It's been amazing. It's come together much faster than I would have anticipated.
So what's the training process like when I'm assuming someone applies for this mm-hmm. position and then you guys go through a screening process, they get accepted. Like, do they start back of house? Do they start front of house? Like, how long do they train on the line before they're ready to actually, like, you know, be in the live fire? Anything that you can tell me about this process, I'm here for, because I'm very interested sure. in it.
I'll start with the back end process stuff. A lot of that is done by Diane Goodcollins and Metro 180. They're identifying people that are currently incarcerated and presenting them with the opportunity of the program that we have, and tell them about it. And then they're doing the vetting process. There's we have limited resources, so we want to make sure when we invest in somebody that it's somebody that they're ready, you know, to kind of take that step. They've made the mental switch of, hey, okay, there's a different way to live life, and I want to do that. And once they want to be on that path, then they join us, and we try and get them along that line. So a lot of that vetting process is Metro 180. When we bring them on board, one thing that Doug does great, and Ben Dabney, our general manager, they do fantastic. When he talks about the teamwork and collaboration and the positive environment, Doug and Ben don't just talk it, they walk it for sure. And a testament to that is the level that everyone's performing at right now. You know, we have, other than Doug, we've got one, what I would call professional cook in the kitchen. And then we've got participants.
Wow.
Yeah. So all the positive things that have come from you and other people online, they're talking about the people that we're really trying to help. So when he says, when he's showing them, you know, the post and the text and everything, it really is those people. And that goes right back to Doug and his talent and him making them feel safe and secure and showing them that they can perform at a high level.
So what's the key to that, Doug, making people feel safe and secure?
I guess at its essence is it would be the way that I would want to be approached and communicated with
if
I were in the, absolutely. As Tim referred to earlier, I can't even wrap my head around the anxiety and insecurity and uncertainty of someone who may have just made one mistake in their life when they were younger at some point, not representative of their character or worth as a human being. And just to get shunned. So, my first thing is you're one of us. You're no different. Because you come out of 180 rap, you're part of the Utilale team. Separate of that, you're now working for us, and we have a tangible business, and our goal is to excel at what we do. And, they kind of hit the ground running from the first day, you know, based on their, level of experience. We had one gentleman who started just washing dishes for us and enthusiastic, very positive-minded guy. He's now part of our team up in the kitchen now, and there are four of us. And so he's performing at a level that I would say many experienced cooks that I've hired over the years are performing at, if not better. And it's all because I believe that I keep using the word collaborative, but there's just such a culture of togetherness and family there and propping each other up. You know, that's what it is. I have yet to see an ounce of negativity in our operation with our team, and I've never seen or been a part of anything like it.
You said something off the top that fascinated me, because in my research, I knew that you'd been in the industry for more than 30 years. I knew that you came into this job from the hospital. I did not know that you hadn't worked in a restaurant previously, that it had been mostly like more hospital hospitality roles. Is that correct?
Actually, the first half of my career was restaurants.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah, my first chef position was M's Pub.
Yes.
Here in Omaha, and I went on to do several other projects. Spent some time in Kansas City and Des Moines as I matured and started to want a life outside of the grueling hours of mm-hmm. restaurant work. I did transition into more of a corporate food service environment, if you will, running corporate food cafeterias and, you know, using a lot of the knowledge that I had to help develop new items and concepts in those environments. So I feel coming back around to this project, it's kind of the sum total of everything I've learned, and I'm able to apply aspects from all of my previous positions really into this project.
Well, that's what I found so interesting, thinking about, you know, kind of your mindset coming into this. And, you know, you talked about, like, you had a 9-to-5 job. That's the opposite of restaurant life. Restaurant life is, you know, your time starts, you know, at a specific hour, and then it's just question mark at the end. You don't really know when you're getting off. And there's all kinds of times where you don't think you're going to be in, and you are. And also, I mean, you were working in a hospital. Like, you're already, you know, doing something for the greater good. You're helping people, and yet you left that to come to this position, to get back into restaurant life. And I was just like, there has to be some like special pull here. And I think it comes from that mentoring aspect. I can see just the way that you were talking about that earlier, and the pride that you have, you know, when you talk about this dishwasher who's already ascended to the level of cook. Like, is it just that teaching and that mentor aspect that you were like, I want that to be a part of my life again?
It certainly played into it, and that was certainly a major attraction when I was first approached about the project. But I'm having so much fun, honestly, right now. I am loving it. I don't know, it doesn't even feel like a job right now. And it was a bit of a shift, and I had to, you know, discuss it with family members as to, look, there's going to be a little transitional shift in my hours and availability. Everyone's been awesome, been on board with it. And, I don't even think about the hours really. It's just, I love going into work each day. I love the rush, and you'll hear from a lot of, you know, kitchen veterans, the rush of the service and mm-hmm. The feeling you get after a successful service. That's energy. That's like oxygen to me. So it's been great.
All right, let's talk about some food. Hey there, listeners. We'll get back to my guest in a minute, but I got to remind you one more time about Certified Piedmontese. Anyone who listens to this podcast or follows me on social media knows that I enjoy my fair share of decadent meals and delicious desserts. And that's why it's really important to me to eat really clean between big meals. And that is one of the main reasons I love Certified Piedmontese. Piedmontese cattle have extra muscle mass, which allows them to maintain a rich tenderness without much fatty marbling. In fact, ounce for ounce, Certified Piedmontese beef has fewer calories and more protein than salmon. Don't believe that healthy food can taste this good? Just try it. When you order off CertifiedPiedmontese.com, use the promo code HOPPEN, that's my last name, H-O-P-P-E-N, for 25% off your order. You will taste the difference for yourself. If you are looking for steak, roasts, tenderloins, bacon, and more, check out CertifiedPiedmontese.com and experience the Certified Piedmontese difference today. And now, back to my guest. So I saw a description of your menu. I believe this is on your website. It's described as new American comfort food, which I feel like is kind of this blanket statement that restaurants use to basically say, we can cook anything we want. How would you describe your menu and the type of food that you're serving at Udalali?
I would say that approachable neighborhood cuisine. You know, we're not trying to reinvent the wheel. I wanted a comfortable space and comfortable items that, that fit the vibe of the space. And I didn't, dining experiences can run the gamut, you know, they can be a, they can be a seminar and, and you're, you know, you're paying attention and you're learning, or maybe you just want to go and have a drink with your friends, or you have family in town and you just want some good food that, you know, will be consistent. So, I did try to, there are a lot of things on there that I'll be honest that I would eat in a heartbeat. You know, this is some of my favorite food, decadent food to eat. So that kind of played into it, but, I just thought it was a good fit for what we were doing. And also, coming off the Marks, you know, there's been, it was such a reverence for what Marks did and the space. I wanted to not go in the opposite direction of what they were doing. You know, they had you know, some very popular, comfortable items. Seasonality is always a part of every menu, but they had their core. You know, everyone talks about the mac and cheese, the smoked chicken lasagna. You know, those are, they're great dishes. I'm proud to have them on the menu. You know, but yeah, I guess that would be. Comfort food seems to fit it the best. People seem comfortable in there.
Yeah, comfort food performed at a high level. Doug is obviously an excellent chef. And what he brings to each dish, even working through, just watch him work through the macaroni and cheese recipe, because we have the Mark's macaroni and cheese recipe, and what Doug does isn't 100% loyal to that. But just watching him work through that to really develop the dish that people get in front of them now. It's reminiscent. They remember the Marks, you know, if they had it before and they were missing, they come in, they're like, oh yeah, this is it. And, but it really is a high level dish for, I'll say, just mac and cheese, you know? Mm-hmm.
I saw the video that you guys posted with the previous owner, Molly, and she was just like, you nailed it. And it's like, well, that's pretty high praise right there.
I
wanted to ask you more about, because you said you wanted to honor some of Mark's, you know, like the smoked lasagna. I think the bread pudding was another dish. Obviously, the mac and cheese. These are things that were on Mark's menu. And again, you're not just replicating those recipes. You're elevating them. But I was just curious, when you're taking over a beloved restaurant like that, especially one that, you know, just closed last year. So I guess the restaurant's been closed for a couple of years, but they officially closed, you know, the shop and everything.
Sure.
How much do you pay homage to Mark's and why Dundee loves that place and, you know, that it was the neighborhood spot versus, well, this is also, you know, yes, it's in Mark's old space, but this is a new restaurant. We're going to put our stamp on this menu as well. How do you balance those things?
Well, at the beginning, it was very, and it still is very important for us to pay homage to Mark. You mentioned Molly Romero a few minutes ago. She's still very involved in the neighborhood of Dundee and everything that goes on down there. We would be fools to not use that resource, right? To not ask her, okay, what made this successful? I mean, we look and we have ideas. It was a lot more than just mac and cheese, right? Molly taught me, literally gave me a book and taught me the value of a third space. So the idea is that, you know, people need a place to work, they need a place to live, and they need a place to be, right? And if you think Cheers and kind of that old TV show, right? And that's what Mark's was to Molly, right? And that's one of the reasons it was so successful, if you sit back and think about it, because the people that were in the neighborhood, that's where they wanted to be. They want to go hang out and see their friends and have some good food. And so at the very beginning, that wasn't, yes, we wanted to be good neighbors. We want to be good to the neighborhood. But there's a difference between that and being the place where people want to be. And once that tumbler kind of fell in my head and things clicked, it was a real obvious direction of what we wanted to do in terms of the space and things like that. And then, again, I can't say there aren't enough superlatives for Doug in his menu and the things that he does. So,
you know, I think it was just a perfect storm. The brand, the arm of the nonprofit that made it possible, all the way to Tim, Joe Lisi, Director of Operations, Ben Dabney, and Bennett Riley, who are front of the house wine spirit experts. It's just at the space itself. There are so many aspects, appealing aspects to the project. And like I said, I'm just proud to be a part of it.
Yeah. And when he says perfect storm, all the people that he just mentioned, integral to the success. All the people have a real personal pull. It's not just a job for any of us. It really isn't. We like to say that of our program for our participants. That's not, we're not just giving them a job. We're trying to give them a new way of thinking. But we came from the other side of it. We're all here for a reason. He left a real cushy job that he could have retired from to be part of this, right? That means something. That's more than just a job. I was looking, longing, you know, saying those prayers at night. Okay, God, I'm okay where I'm at, but I feel that there's something more. Where do I need to be? And the same is true of Bennett and his background with the Mark space and his knowledge of wine and everything they can bring to it. And the same is true of Ben and his background. And even we, Sam Pham Restaurants is our partner, our consultant, restaurant consultant. And they're kind of the ones that brought Doug aboard. But even those guys over at Sam Pham, they have personal reasons for being involved in the project. And we all have a background. So when Doug says perfect storm, it's like a divine perfect storm in my mind, for sure.
I absolutely believe that God brings people together, especially when there's, you know, a meaning and a reason behind it, and Oodle Wildly certainly has that.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the mac and cheese a little bit, because this was a dish when I never unfortunately got to dine at Mark's. But I heard about this dish, and like when Mark's closed, people talked about this mac and cheese like they'd lost a child. Like it was insane. And I was like, guys, we're talking about mac and cheese here. Like, can it be that good? He came in and had it. It was really darn good. Like, I can see why people have such a strong connection to that dish. So it sounds like you had access to the original recipe. How do you take that recipe and say, okay, this is great. I understand and I identify the things that people loved about it. Here's all my experience. Here's what I know about cooking. What can I take from here and interject it into this thing that people already love to take it to an even higher level?
I guess, you know, as with all items on the menu, I wanted to make it executable and consistent. The flavors were all there. I just made some adjustments, I guess some textural adjustments, removed the flour from the recipe, the roux. So I think it results in a creamier, you know, some folks would describe it as wetter, but the cheese, the integrity of the cheese stays, it's melty, you know, it's not seizing up. So that's, I think that's really the secret to it. And it just kind of blows my mind a little. There are so many talented chefs in town, so many places that have been doing mac and cheese for years, great versions of mac and cheese. So I'm humbled a little bit, you know, by the feedback we're getting and the reaction, because I think it's a very good dish. I think a lot of people execute mac and cheese really well. So I guess, you know, I'm happy we're making the people happy that, that wanted that dish back, and we're thrilled with the feedback on it.
I honestly loved that the sauce was a little bit thinner and a little bit looser, because like you said, it doesn't seize up. The mac and cheese is not at all dry, which normally, honestly, when I get mac and cheese at restaurants, I find it to be pretty dry, and that's always disappointing. And those noodles, the cavatappi noodles that you use, are kind of long and spindly, and because the sauce, you know, isn't so thick, it allows it to get into those noodles more. My only thing with the dish, and this feels crazy asking to serve starch with a starch, but if there's a piece of bread alongside it and you could just come and scoop in all that sauce at the end, oh, That's like the only critique I would have, because otherwise, yeah, it's a flavor bomb. It's very, very good. So I want to talk about some of the other menu items. Obviously, you know, we've talked about a couple of them that pay homage to Mark's, but you've also got a burger, and a very unique burger, I would say. You've got a lobster roll. You've got salmon, short rib, mussels. as you're trying to imagine what you want Udalali to be, like, how did you bring these different menu items together? Like, what is the sun around all these, around which all these menu items are orbiting? There's a word I wanted.
I guess it would go back to, and not to be, but my personal sense of what comfort food and what good food does to me as a person. I guess the hamburger is a great example. I probably spent way too much time on the hamburger. I don't think so, but, like, you know, sourcing the beef, we do use we use a very good product from Snake River Farms. That's a it's a little more of an elevated product, but I wanted that that level of burger on the menu. So yeah, it is a burger and fries, but I wanted it to be a burger and fries that people craved and wanted to come back for. You know, a lot of people do a hand cut fry. I like our version of the hand cut fry. I think it's been popular. With everything, as far as the sun,
it's the sun. Honestly, he won't tell you this. I joke. I say Doug has an encyclopedia for a palate, and if you work with him and eat with him long enough, you get to see things. We have a Uda Lager, so we were out tasting beers from different places and trying to get an idea of what we wanted that to be. And he took a sip of a beer and he goes, "Oh, this reminds me of something that I had in St. Louis 7 years ago." And he went on to tell me, about the meal, right? Not just the beer, but every flavor that came along with that. You know, he just described the burger. He said, "We have this product from Snake River Farms." Well, that means nothing to you or I, right? We know Wagyu or whatever, but Snake River, well, maybe you. Maybe you're more advanced than I am.
I have heard of Snake River Farms, but that's okay. We'll go along with it.
But when he says maybe he spent too much time, he didn't spend too much time because the dish reflects how much time he spent on it. But literally, I had conversations with other people going, "Oh my God, pick a beef already, right? Just pick one and go." But he's very methodical. There's a reason he's looking for everything, and it's magic to watch him put those things together. It really is.
So, like, some people are blessed with photographic memories. You've got that with food, kind of.
You know, it's my whole career. And I guess purpose in life is surrounded as food based. You know, everyone always asks, "Why did you want to be a chef?" Well, I love to eat.
You know, if I can't, amen to that, brother.
That's what it came down to, you know. And well before I ever thought of being a culinarian, you know, I had a mind that I tried something, I wanted to replicate it. I wanted to read about it. I wanted to find out more. And so there was just, I guess some people would call it a passion. I would call it an obsession, a little bit of food, enjoying food, eating food, seeing food, trying new food, and eventually creating. And so, yeah, when I look at like a chicken sandwich or a lobster roll, I just break down the elements of what makes something as simple as a lobster roll good. Well, if you overcook the lobster and it's dry and tough, that's going to obviously be a negative. So how do we prevent that? Well, we poach it slowly in butter. We hold it at a temperature where it'll stay soft and moist. And it's a simple dish, but we execute it the way that I would want it, I guess, if I were sitting at the table. So,
well, that's kind of one of the through lines that I see with your menu is that, yeah, and I love that you just list everything so simply. It's on the menu. It's just burger, chicken sando, grilled cheese, like short rib, like these aren't like real flowery descriptions. But then when you see the ingredients underneath, you're like, wait a second, a burger with buttermilk blue cheese, caramelized bacon, grilled onion, and English mustard. That's not a burger I'm used to. Or the chicken sandwich has white barbecue sauce. I haven't seen another restaurant in Omaha that's doing that. That's something unique. So you're taking the comforting, familiar items, but then you're putting those little twists in there that's like, yes, this is going to be an excellent version of what you expect, but there's also going to be some surprises in there. And that leads into the next dish I have to talk about, and that's the dark chocolate creme brulee. because whoever came up with this, and if it's you, sorry, you're going to get a hug. I want to hug this person because it is just, it's so unique. I love creme brulee, just the, you know, normal vanilla standard version. But this takes that just beautiful, rich custard, the nice caramelized crust, and it introduces that rich bitterness of chocolate in such a unique way. And I mean, it got to the point where my wife and I, at the end, you know, we're doing the spoon fight where we're trying to, you know, each get each other out of the way so we can get those last bites. Who came up with this dish and where did it come from?
Well, so Tim and others on the team can attest to the fact that desserts are not necessarily my primary area of focus. So in my mind, it was kind of a utilitarian solution. It's like, okay, well, we can execute a creme brulee. We don't really have anything chocolate on the menu. I'm a big dark chocolate guy, so it's not easy to incorporate chocolate into that dish without it being grainy or milky. And I found after a couple test runs of 60% dark chocolate, semi-sweet chocolate of good quality got us great results. And so that's where we are. It was pretty simple.
And he started by saying, oh, that was just a throwaway, right? And then he walked you through how he, you know, all the steps he went through to make it perfect, because that's just who he is. It's incredible.
And, you know, I think what helped this menu too, you know, I like I said, I'm humbled by the credit I get for it, but I ran all of these dishes ad nauseum by these guys. I mean, countless variations. I wanted the feedback. I wanted the customer perspective. I think as a chef, you can get caught up in your own sense of expertise. And, you know, I'm not the one out there dining. I'm cooking for the public. I'm cooking for, you know, other people. So, to me, simplicity was the essence of this menu. It's nice that people recognize intricacies that I maybe take for granted a little bit. No real secrets. Good quality ingredients, preparation techniques, and consistency, and being clear in your instruction and your training with your team to execute it exactly the same way every time. Mm-hmm. That's the huge challenge, really. Mm-hmm. It's one thing for me to prepare something, but to be able to have a team put it together time after time after time, and it's consistent. That's everything to me.
And how are you able to teach that team? Because I mean, that's a difficult thing to teach when you've got a team of people who either went to culinary school or have been working in restaurants for 10 years, to be able to teach that consistency and say, well, you know, maybe you've done it this way here, but this is how we're going to do it in my kitchen. You know, you've got some people on your team now who haven't worked in restaurants previously, and they're coming in blind. So what is that teaching like?
Well, that's actually the easiest and most productive is a blank slate, because then there aren't a lot of alternatives or I was trained this way, so why are you doing it this way? It's simple and direct. And yes, every chef has their methods, their ways of doing things. And, you know, I just stick to my guns. I'm always ready to learn something new. And I kind of go back to the collaboration of the team. You know, somebody will have suggestions that, maybe I didn't think of. Short rib fries, they started out with Havarti cheese on them, and it was turning out dry, kind of unremarkable. And I thought, well, we've got the Oodle Lager. Let's try it with a sharp cheddar beer cheese. It was just kind of a one-off, right? I was like, let's try it this way. And it worked, you know, and it's one of our more popular appetizers. And who would have thought, you know, fries, shredded beef and beer cheese would be, I don't know.
I don't know about you, man. That sounds pretty good to me.
it's a great, you know, and I think it comes down to execution. I mean, yeah. I think we do a really good hand cut fry. We take a lot of care to prepare it so it they always come out hot. They always come out consistent. I think that has a lot to do with it. You just want a good product that people care about, that the people that prepared it actually care about what they're doing and put their heart and soul into it.
And you can see the results. I mean, obviously the restaurant, the menu itself are the results, but Doug has this, if it's not right, it's not going out.
Yeah.
It just isn't. And you can see that, and you know, in your head, you can hear Gordon Ramsay yelling, standards, right? But really, that's who Doug is. And in terms of teaching people, what I've seen is that, it's the right way to say this, there's a trust, right? Once Doug trusts you to do those things, you know you're doing it right. And he doesn't get loud if something's not performed the right way. He'll just go in and do it again very patiently. There's no huffs. There's no again. It's okay. Let's start again. Here's where we're going from. And so sometimes it can be a little frustrating to see Doug working so hard because I'd be like, dude, you're an executive chef. You should kind of be out of here by now. But he wants to make sure that the people that are performing that stuff are sending out the food that he would send out. And he needs to trust them to do that. And when I say needs, I don't mean like a dysfunctional thing. It's he needs to know. It's important to him that when you come in at 9:30 at night and he's gone for the evening, that the dish that comes out is the same dish that he'd serve you. So if he can't trust somebody to serve that dish, he's going to be there serving that dish. And then when people see that level of dedication to what he's doing, to what I'll call his art form, and they respect it, and they're like, that is what it should be. I mean, that's what a true mentor is, right? And in my opinion, one of the great aspects of Doug's mentorship for the people coming through our restaurant and our program is that he shows them, this is what it should be. This is the level, you know. There's okay levels, and there's lots of restaurants that serve things at okay levels. Doug, he'll tell you if there's been a dish in the last 3 weeks that he's let out, he wouldn't sleep at night. I know him well enough to know he wouldn't sleep at night because he'd worry about it. He'd be like, man, what'd they think? Are they going to write a review? That's how much he cares about what he's doing, and it's incredible.
So how do you find that trust level? Like, how do you know when someone has reached that stage where, yes, I know that I can trust somewhere. Even if I'm not here, I can feel confident putting my stamp on every dish that comes out of the kitchen that person worked on.
Well, I think I can, I'm able to take my inner sense of perfection, I guess, as Tim would say, the environment in the kitchen, when we're on the line, when we're prepping, is not chaos and yelling. It is, I'm at the helm. I'm watching my guys. So I'm watching and I can see, hey, turn the flame down on those scallops. They're searing too hard. It's not about throwing anything, it's not about being the stereotype chef and high energy, throwing things around, steam everywhere, just chaos. We work pretty methodically, efficiently. And I think the reason that we hit our stride as early as we did as far as a new restaurant is because I think that's the way people learn and work best. A culture of negativity won't get you anywhere. Negativity and negative criticism.
Fear.
Yeah.
Doesn't work anymore.
Right. Absolutely. And it why would it have ever worked, honestly? Once I started to kind of self-actualize what I felt like at the end of a service, when I was younger and my head was just spinning 360 degrees and I'd spend all night ruminating on, the service, I was less productive. I spent more time in my head than actually just relaxing, enjoying the process, and understanding that a civil, organized environment works best. I mean, we're a well-oiled machine at a pretty early stage in our restaurant, and it's because there is that culture of respect and lack of negativity. That's a big one for me, because it just takes one or two people who kind of can spread that an attitude and really, you know, kind of affect your operation. So that's everything, I think, for as far as our success. We've got some good food. We've got a beautiful place, but it's a place where I believe people enjoy coming into work every day and enjoy being with each other and really take a lot of pride at the end of the day in what we've accomplished.
I want to shine a little bit more of a spotlight on the 180 Wrap program at Metro Community College. So, Tim, this one's for you. Just looking at some statistics that I found online, this is a program that's worked with more than 9,000 individuals since 2015 and has a 99% success rate in job placements in all kinds of fields. Pretty incredible. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe Udalali is the first restaurant to be associated with this program. How exciting was it to see it expand into food?
Very exciting. Obviously they found restaurant positions for other people, but in terms of the training and the teaching, parts of our mission, that's really where we're unique. And we're unique because Metro 180 has a leader in Diane Good Collins that is a unicorn, the same way that Chef Doug is a unicorn in the kitchen. She has a fantastic backstory. She's got lived experience. There's a reason why she's working with the reentry population. But she cares about every one of those 9,600 people that she's worked with. She can tell you a story. She can tell you the tears that she's cried with them. She can tell you the redemption stories that she's seen come around. And that level of caring is what makes anything successful. That's what's making our restaurant successful is Doug and his level of caring and Ben and Bennett out front. But that's what's Metro and the 180 Wrap program is to me. Obviously, it's bigger than that one person. But she started, if you ever have the opportunity to talk to her, she'll tell you, she started in a back storeroom on one building in the Metro campus.
Really?
Yeah. And there's a whole building now. And that's because she cared. I'm going to repeat a story that she told me, and it won't be perfect, but I think Diane will forgive me. But she started working with reentry, and it was Metro was doing reentry. She wasn't the first person to do it. She started working with the Metro's reentry program, and as one of like three jobs she was working at the time, and she was a mother. But she was, you know, reentry herself, so it mattered to her, so she cared about it. And somebody had come out of incarceration and couldn't get a towel to take a shower for 4 days. Right, just because they needed a place to live, and the time they were released, they didn't have any family around to help them, things like that, right? And Diane finally said, she heard the story, and she's like, are you kidding me? So she went and fixed the problem. She went and got somebody a towel, you know, and some toiletries and things like that. The next thing she did as not somebody in charge of a program, but as an employee of a program, is she went in the president's office and said, we can do better. We can do better. I mean, this is ridiculous. This is somebody we're supposed to be helping, somebody we're supposed to be working with, and they can't get a towel. We can do better. And whoever that person was, I forget who, she's told me, but I forget who it was at the time, said, yeah, we can. Absolutely. So how do we do that? And so that's who Diane is. And that's the level of care that she has for each one of those participants that come through 180. And we're trying to reflect that. I think when you listen to Doug talk, it's pretty obvious that he has that level of care. And we all do in the building. We care for each other. Whatever need somebody's going to go through, we're going to help them out. You know, that's kind of who we're supposed to be in life, I think. But to take that extra step and do it, it's pretty easy to say, yeah, I care about Doug, but or I care about one of our participants, but it's a whole different thing when that participant says, okay, well, I'm having to work until 11 at night and the buses stop at 10 and I have to be back here. Okay, so let's get them a bike. Let's get them some transportation. Let's give them a ride home. Let's get them Ubers. Doug can't count on both hands how many times he's arranged rides for our employees to get back and forth and pay to Uber. And what was frustrating to me is finally one day he goes, hey, we got to call an Uber every night for this guy. And I'm like, okay, let's do it. And he's like, do you think maybe the restaurant can start paying for it? He was paying for it out of his own pocket, right? So, I mean, that I'm off base of the question that you ask, but I'm showing you that the people in the program, top to bottom, are dedicated to helping and dedicated to being people that make a difference in the world. And we can't make a difference in Israel right now, and we can't make a difference in the Ukraine right now, but you know where we can? Omaha, Nebraska, because that's where we are. So we're doing everything we can to make changes. That's what Diane, I've seen her do at Metro over and over and over again, and that's what we're trying to hold up at Udalali.
And talking to you guys, it is becoming readily apparent why this restaurant has hit the ground running. The intentionality and the care behind it, and not just the food, but just the overall caring for the diners, caring for the employees. It's remarkable, and I commend you for that. I love to ask restaurants, chefs, restaurant owners about opening night, because there's just such a mix of emotions that come with that. You guys had your grand opening on March 12th, but you started serving guests with some soft opening services on Tuesday, March 5th of 2024. When I bring that date up and you think of the first, even if it's not the first day, but the first couple services, what pings to the front of your brain?
Well, first, it's the wrong date. I mean, it's right for what you know, but actually Tuesday, February 27th is the first time we had people come in and eat.
Fair.
So even okay. before our soft opening, we had Ben Dabney calls them our soft softs. We invited the people that worked on the building. We invited the people that were involved in the program. We invited all them to come in and be our guests. A, to say thank you. B, so they could be our guinea pigs, right? Because you can't just open up one day and you know, everything's running. You have to learn your par levels. You have to learn how long everything's taking to fire, to time it correctly. You have to, front of the house has a whole, you know, service standards that they have to go through and everything. So we served people for a week before we even got to that March 5th soft opening to just practice on them. And it was, not all restaurants can do that. We're very gifted and very thankful for what we can do, because we were able to, obviously, that food's all free. Not a lot of people could do that, but we had the resources, thankfully, that we could do it the right way. It was really important for us to open the right way. Because you can just open to be open because I need income coming in. It's not the right way to do it. And a lot of restaurants, it shows. So February 27th, Tuesday, February 27th was great. Lots of nerves. But the Tuesday, March 5th, for me, all I had to do was walk around and put out fires. Hopefully it was shaking hands and saying hi to people and saying thanks for coming and being part of this. But the rest of it was putting out fires, and I hate to say how many plumbing-ish fires, a plumbing fire sounds funny, but how many plumbing issues have come up in the, you know, 3 weeks we've been open and serving food and things like that. There's always something that
fire alarms up. Went off.
Fire alarm, yeah, we had the fire alarms go off one night for service. So there's a lot of stuff. The proverbial duck, right? We're kicking like heck underneath, pretty mm-hmm. placid on the surface. So nerves for sure, but I knew the team that we had was the right team. I mentioned before, you know, I feel God's fingerprints on this, and if he's for you, who can be against you, right? So it's going to succeed. You just have to work hard to get everything pointed in the right direction and make that help. But, you know, I was confident that it would be successful. Just how rocky it would be at the beginning, I guess, was what I was most nervous about. But before that Tuesday the 12th opening, by the 12th, I knew it was going to be fantastic.
Doug, what for you? You can go with any of the opening dates that you want. The soft, soft opening, the soft opening, the public get in here opening, whatever you want to tell me. What do you remember most?
My first day with the organization was actually November 1st, if that gives you an idea of some of the construction challenges we had along the way and the opening delays. So there was a lot of starting and stopping. We were testing food. We had the kitchen starting to get the kitchen organized, come in the next week, and there's a half inch of dust all over everything because somebody had to tear open a wall, or we had an 8-foot trench in our basement for a while. So a lot of the momentum wasn't clicking there. You know, I felt like start, stop, start, stop. I think it was that first weekend service of soft openings when I felt like it's real now. You know, that things are coming together. We're putting a product out that people get to enjoy or not enjoy. You know, however, I'd like to think we hit the mark on most of them. And we had one service where, you know, the first, like, hey, this is real life service, why at 9 o'clock, and I was running out of everything. And that was it. I mean, we recovered from that, and it's been, you know, smooth sailing's probably underestimating it a little bit, but we're functioning on a pretty high level for the short amount of time we've been here. And every, you know, this past weekend it was rough, but the feeling I get of looking back and knowing what we've accomplished and how much better and more confident the team's getting, it's awesome. It really is. So yeah, I don't know if I can name a specific date. Probably that Friday where That was probably one of my more stressful days because I don't like to run out of anything, and we were running out of everything. That was kind of the, I guess, the wake-up call we all needed, and we've adjusted, and, you know, so far so good.
And to show you how far they've come, and Doug in the kitchen coming in such a short time, that Friday we did about 100, it was 102 or 103 guests that night, and this past Friday we did over 150, and it was, so when he says smooth sailing, he's adjusted well, he's led well, and the whole team has been responsive for sure.
All right, we're getting up against the clock a little bit here, but I got to get you guys out on one more question. When you look at, and this feels insane to ask about a restaurant that's been open for less than 2 months, but when you look at the future of Udalali, what is your hope for the future of this restaurant?
I would say our common goal, what we would love to see is, you know, 3, 4, or 5 years from now, we're on to doing another project for the organization, and the restaurant is run by people from the 180 wrap program, top to bottom. That would be the ultimate satisfaction of this project.
Yeah, lots of success stories for our participants and the people coming through that are working with us and growing them, and so we can go out and plant seeds of other trees. So hopefully Udalali 5 years from now up running fantastically with faces that aren't ours, and we're out starting new things. So.
That's awesome. Listeners or people who are watching this, like, this is a really, really cool restaurant. I mean, it would be a cool restaurant if it served average food, but just with the mission that you guys have and the heart that you have behind it. But this food is awesome. Like, I've only been there for one meal so far. It's going to be many more. The mac and cheese lives up to the legend. The salmon was awesome. I already talked about the dark chocolate creme brulee. Like, this is a really, really cool place. And we didn't even talk about the space itself. Like, it's a beautiful restaurant, and you can look down on Dundee outside those great great glass windows. That's not what I wanted to say, but whatever. Regardless, get out to Udalali. See what everybody's talking about. This is a really sweet place. Pay these guys a visit. Tim and Doug, thank you so much for giving me the time to come on the show today and for just devoting so much time and energy into what is just an amazing project.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you very much for shining a little light on us. We appreciate it.
Of course. Omaha, as always, thanks for eating with us.
A Huda Media Production.